of our line. Tom, how are you?
I'm good this morning, Tony. How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Before we dive into some of the topics I wanted to talk to you about, just wanted to get your take on Governor Blanchard. What did you learn from Governor Blanchard?
Well, one of the things that I enjoyed working with him is he was smart, capable, focused, and very timely, and timely to these days when the governor was in office. The top three issues facing the states were jobs, jobs, and jobs. And when he ran for re-election 4 years later, the four issues that were top were jobs, 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 and more jobs. So he was focused like a laser on trying to get the state back working again. And deja vu, here we are again.
Did he lose that election because he took John Engler for granted and didn't campaign as hard as he should have?
Well, I think people have dissected that election in a lot of different ways. There were more votes in the suburban ring that year, 1990, than ever before, more than came out of the city of Detroit. If the governor would have gotten the same voter turnout in the city, as I recall it, in that election year that he did in the previous two elections, he would have been governor for a third term. So there are a lot of ways that you can dissect it, but I think there was some voter fatigue. There was the issue of the lieutenant governor, how that issue was handled. But all in all, he had a very good eight-year run, and I think the state benefited from his leadership.
You recently wrote that you have seen the irony that no one is safe while the legislature is in session. Tell me the details about that.
Yeah, this is a Dome Magazine article, and people should check that out, domemagazine.com. Some, I think, wonderful writers, Jack Lessenberry and a number of others that write there that are exceptional. But it was kind of funny, I thought, over the holiday weekend when I picked up the paper and the AP had a story that said the GOP legislature, which oftentimes is viewed as a lesser government, had passed 603 new laws. I found it kind of ironic on Independence Day that we needed 603 laws with life, safety, and liberty seemed pretty good before all these laws were passed. So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek piece of what happens when the legislature gets together, whether from the left or the right. They seem to create a whole lot of new things to tell us how to live our lives.
Did you think that some of these laws, although many of them not really significant in nature, but do you think they were done kind of cloak and dagger?
Well, you know, my piece wasn't on that, but again, it's just the sheer number of laws. One could argue some of them were repealing others, but I think your comment, Tony, was kind of telling, and that is, I think what you just said is that some of them were, you know, not particularly beneficial or necessary. I mean, we should question with a full-time legislature how many laws are getting passed and what good they're doing for the public good.
We've talked a lot about online learning. We've talked a lot about that topic with some of the country's best experts. Tom, you recently wrote another piece that stated that educators should be focused on how and what students learn, not where. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a report I wrote in 2005 called The New Education Revolution, E-Learning for Michigan, where I took a deep dive looking into how technology can advance teaching and learning. You know, let's remember, Socrates taught people under trees. So having a $100 million building does not necessarily learning make. And the point that I made in this report is that before we go and invest all that money in brick and mortar, there ought to be a technology impact statement. I mean, some of the best minds and learners taking a look at how technology could change and advance learning as opposed to building buildings. Let me give you two examples, Tony, why it makes sense for us to do this. We end up spending billions of dollars building prisons. Once they're built, people are going to find reasons to stick the people in there. which is an extremely costly proposition. We ought to ask ourselves, is there a better way, is there a cheaper way, is there a more effective way to deliver services? The second is on mental health. Today, because of great advocates and parents across the state, people that are developmentally disabled are living lives in communities. It wasn't so many decades ago that we had thousands, tens of thousands of people with mental retardation locked away in buildings. And a lot of people did not want us to close those buildings, not because they were the best way to serve people with developmental disabilities, but because they were job centers for people, economic development activity around people. And so I'm just saying that we ought to constantly be thinking how we're using limited resources in order to maximize gain. And certainly technology, e-learning, is one way, and my focus primarily is on blended e-learning opportunities, not just taking lousy curriculum and putting it up on the internet.
I found it interesting that this report you wrote in 2005 was in a recent column by Dave Murray, and he was talking about the amount of buildings, especially in the Detroit school district, that are abandoned right now, and they're waiting to be sold or either leveled because they don't have the students in there. And it got him to thinking about something you wrote about years and years ago, that it's not where you learn, it's the fact that you do.
Absolutely. And again, e-learning, blended e-learning, that's making a difference in students' lives. There's a particular program I encourage your listeners to take a look at called WAY Program, W-A-Y program.net. It stands for Widening Advancement for Youth. And it's a blended e-learning model where the young people actually come into learning centers, and they focus on project-based learning, high rigorous academic standards, where they have mentors and expert teachers that are working with the students. And this program is making a difference in the lives of children, helping them get the education they need and deserve in order to thrive in the hyper-competitive 21st century knowledge economy.
Tom, you recently traveled to China, and you wrote a piece talking about sustainable development and how America could help themselves by helping China. Tell us about that.
Well, anyone who's traveled to China knows that the air quality is poor and the water quality is poor. And I believe that with our technology, with our creativity and our intellectual know-how, we can make green off of China's dirt. We can help. We have here in the Lansing area, in the metropolitan Detroit area, experience cleaning up poor air quality, cleaning up rivers, lakes, and the like. You remember, Johnny, it wasn't that many years ago that Lake Erie actually was on fire. It was so polluted. And today it's cleaned up significantly. So there's ways that we can use our technology, the knowledge that is generated from Michigan State, U of M, Wayne State University, in order to help the Chinese clean up some of that mess. And it can help put our people back to work and create wealth for this state. We should constantly be looking at what the 1.3 billion Chinese need and want, and ask how we can help meet that need in order to generate jobs and opportunity here in Michigan.
Thanks so much, Tom.
It's always good to be with you, Tony.